Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together? Is my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, I'm okay, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. And Ricky on the board, S&P futures are down 111. Nasdaq futures down 520, so not a good morning. Oil's way up. Strait of Hormuz is closed, so there's not a whole lot of good news on the wall here. Unless you're somebody who likes war, I guess. I don't know who that would be necessarily, but not sure any how long this is any of this going to last. Got a chart here. Do we have, who do we have? Do we have anybody?
Me.
Kevin, how are you?
Kevin.
I'm looking at the a chart here of, it's kind of an odd chart to read, actually, but it's looks like out of the 20% of the global liquefied natural gas exports come from the Gulf, go through the Strait. Evidently, they have some liquefied. I didn't know that they had gotten so far along with that. I thought we were kind of the only ones that did a lot of that, but evidently they do as well. Looks like China is the biggest recipient of oil out of there, followed by India, South Korea, Japan, other Asia, Europe, U.S. not so much, and other. How would you like to be the other? Who's the other? Who's other?
Oh, the other is like, you know, it'd be cool to be the other because you're involved in everything.
Yeah, you're just kind of the other.
You're kind of the Renaissance entity.
Did they?
Now, the Strait of Hormuz is not technically closed. In other words, there is still some traffic going through there, but the insurers have raised their rates so damn high that a lot of people don't want to bother, and a lot of people don't want to take the risk that something is going to happen there.
Right after the close yesterday, who's ever in charge of Iran announced that they're closing. Any vessel going through there is live game.
Yeah, and that's what they're saying. Whether that's idle threat or not is debatable. And as you mentioned, China gets a whole lot of oil through there, so they're really pressuring. They're pushing back on Iran and saying, you can't do this. we need the supply.
Yeah, it's a... I did
do a little checking after a little email thread we had yesterday. China has been buying their oil from Iran at conservatively about a 30% discount over the market price, and in I've seen other estimates that say it's greater than that. So,
but the Iranian oil does not go through the Strait, does it?
I think some of it does.
Some might, but I don't think the lion's share does.
You've got sanctions, so they have to work around sanctions. And And remember, anybody who violates the sanctions then gets their own sanctions from the U.S. So it's not in their interest to do so when they have other alternatives.
So who's driving the price of oil up? Who benefits from that? We have people here to do.
I'm sure there are. Certainly our domestic drillers benefit from it, from their production. But, you know, depending on what happens with this over the next several weeks, we'll see how oil prices stabilize or don't stabilize.
Well, the guy who made the timely buy on the refineries that use Venezuelan oil is probably doing pretty good.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Timing is everything, isn't it? Boy, as my mother used to say, she was a good bridge player, one peak is worth two good finesses.
Yeah.
So, funny about that. Hey,
father was a very good card player in general.
Yeah. This is the only person I knew that would go down in the morning in Vegas and play with all the what do they call them? People who work for the house and stay there and look like they're playing.
Don't know.
I'll think of it.
Oh no, not much of a gambler either, inclination or interest here. So
it is. There's a name for them. If you go down and you see a poker game like in Vegas, well, I don't know if you're downtown anyway, you see 3-4 people playing, a couple seats open. Chances are the people playing there work for the house, and I'll think of the name of it. Anyway, she loved those people. She said they were pretty good players. They were a challenge. Whatever. Explain before Jan comes in. Explain the. You sent me a thing yesterday regarding. Oh, by the way, you know that. Well, we'll talk about this first. You sent me a thing regarding the Joe Rogan thing, and the reason why that tickled my.
What did you say? I thought that was Carlson.
Yeah. Well, whatever. What's the difference? Yeah, it was Tucker Carlson.
Big difference.
Okay, actually. But I very rarely listen to anything.
Carlson is a locked in point of view, and he invites his guests pretty much accordingly. Joe Rogan is a pretty good interviewer, and so he gets a broad spectrum of guests, and he just has he actually has a very good way of sitting back, having conversations, and because everything is, you know, 2 to 3 hours on his show. They do get in depth. They do get a lot of follow ups and so on. I really enjoy his interviews with people, whether it's someone like J.D. Vance or whether it's someone like Bernie Sanders. They spend a lot of time and talk, you know, with a lot of follow up. And you don't get much follow up when you listen to interviews nowadays.
Well, the thing that tickled my innards on this one was a lady was on there, and I don't know who the hell she was. Started talking about this international movement by essentially ongoing by central banks. You know, and I think she thinks essentially Trump and all these other people, and maybe Biden and the other people, are essentially a pawn in the middle of this worldwide central bank. Now, I don't know if it's Davos people. I don't know who the hell would be running it, Kevin. I don't know. Whoever they are, I don't think they don't care whether they're Democratic or Republican. But it's been a drive now to control. Like every transaction that anybody does worldwide, that's why you see, you know, I'll use the term, people here, especially young people, that don't want to use any cash. They think they're playing right into it. Essentially, they don't want any. And one of Iran's problems, in addition to being no goodniks in a lot of areas, one of their problems is they're a great source of leakage from the system. In any country that is a source of leakage from the system, these guys will, over time, find a way to conquer them or do something with them and force them into this system where everybody knows everybody else. Not everybody. Some people know everything that everybody else is doing worldwide. I don't know if she's right or wrong, but it was interesting that there could be another whole theme that nobody even thought about here. And when you think about it, you know, she says they're probably the single biggest cause of leakage in the system right now.
Explain what you mean by leakage.
Leakage is transactions going on that whoever these people are can't find a way to know about. They're not in on, whether it would be a digital dollar or a digital crypto, or whether it would just be everybody does everything online and everybody knows exactly what everybody does.
Yeah, and this by the way is why I am so dead set against a dollar denominated. Cryptocurrency controlled by the Federal Reserve. I want no part of that for just that reason, because the lack of the inability to have any privacy. You don't really have much privacy on your normal dealings anyway, to the extent that you use plastic, and that's fine. We can opt in, we can opt out of that to a large extent, but to enforce that on the public is not something I want to see happen.
You know the two guys who last week volunteered to do that for the government? Trump's two kids.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
I don't know who, talking about a stupid story, Kevin. This kind of stuff sticks in my head for some reason. There was a guy trading the OEX. Basically, he was a broker. He wasn't a trader. I don't even know the guy's name, but his acronym was DIP. Okay, now, first of all, Anybody who would pick that acronym, you got to kind of wonder.
You got a two-syllable nickname. Right?
Yeah, well, he was the Dipster right away, right? So.
Oh, the Dipster? No, yeah. I was thinking something else.
Well, that too. That too. And he, somewhat of a character. Matter of fact, one day he wore two different kinds of shoes in the pit. And of course, everybody noticed it and cleared out around him, and everybody was pointing at his feet. This was the kind of humor we had. But it wasn't like he had two pairs of running shoes sort of the same color. One of them was a running shoe. The other one was like a boat shoe. Anyway, so almost, the guy gets hired by the exchange. And we're at one of these little parties, and I'm on the board, so I'm sitting there, you know, minding my own business. The guy comes up and he goes, "Hey, Tom, what do you think of this?" And I go, "What do I think of what exactly?" And the guy who traded two next to me, John Erickson, was the nicest guy. He's a broker for Pershing. And he says to me, "You know, I mean, going through, whenever you pass through a door through a turnstile, you use your clicker, right? Your badge or whatever you want to call it, your card you put on your coat,
key card.
And I never dreamed that anybody like looked at any of this stuff. Well, evidently, he would look at all the key card stuff, and the elevators at the CBOE would go to the 7th floor. I mean, you're already a member, so you're in the building. But then you need another key card, like to get into the executive offices on 7. But outside the offices were the bathrooms. So if you wanted a little privacy, you could go to a different floor, not go where all the traders were. So evidently, John Erickson, every day at 10:30, would go to the bathroom by the 7th floor. So the Dipster says to me, "What do you think he's doing in there?" I said, "Well, gee, Dip, I think he's probably going to the bathroom. Don't you know that's his break at 10:30? "Man, I don't know. It sounds pretty suspicious to me." It was suspicious. So just when you think nobody's looking, Kevin, somebody's looking.
Looking.
Everybody's looking.
Yeah, everybody. Somehow, just when you think nobody would care if security has me going to work every morning at 5:45, that somebody somewhere is looking at it. You know.
Sun goes, I always feel like somebody's watching me.
Yeah. Well, what does my brother say? Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, so John, how are you?
Good. Good morning, Kevin. Morning, Tom.
Hey, we're gonna ask Kevin, explain to me, if you know. We went back and forth. We'll do a little jocks here before we pile into the market. Well, you know, I don't know. Can anybody explain what this big, every day there's this big surge in gold when the market goes down because of the war news, and the next morning people turn around and hammer gold. Gold was up, you know, 100 and some bucks last night. Now it's down 70. I don't get that, but anyway, Kevin, can you explain to me this thing going on with this quarterback you're talking about? Who does the contract? First of all, explain what happened to this kid. Secondly, who writes the contract? If you can, just take it from the top, if you can.
All right. Well, it's a University of Cincinnati quarterback. I forget where he's going to college now. I'd have to go pull up the article again. But
it's like Clemson or someplace, isn't it? Or
yeah,
Florida.
And he ordered he agreed to a multi-year stint at Cincinnati, and in exchange got paid, you know, a big chunk of the $20.5 million that they're allowed to pay out in what they are calling NIL money. It's really settlement money. It's a salary. Sooner or later, they're going to have to admit that these people are employees of the university, but for now, we'll call it NIL money. And so they're just trying to get a clawback on it. And now it's a lawsuit has been filed. This is the second time, because we saw that with the Duke quarterback earlier in the off season. And in the Duke quarterback's case, they wound up settling the deal, and I don't think they ever announced the results. But it's just kind of interesting, because I've long felt that the issue with people transferring is, and they're probably, if they really want to make it work from the school standpoint, they're going to have to make them employees and sign real employment contracts with them, because these NIL deals, I have no idea what the contract looks like. That would be interesting with a public school to put in a FOIA request and see what some of these contracts look like. University of Cincinnati, I don't know if it's a public school or a private school. I don't know much about the university itself, but that it would be interesting to do a FOIA request and see what the deal actually says and what the contract language is, because but either way, you have somebody making an agreement to be there, and then they they get a better deal and they expect to walk away.
But he played 2 years though, right?
Yeah, he did play 2 years for him, but I don't think the agreement for the I don't think the 2 year agreement came until after his first year there.
Well,
they were looking for two more years out of him.
Okay, so there's,
and they were going to pay him a lot of money for it. So,
well, this is there's different levels here, and I don't want to go too much with this because the market's crashing here. But the I'm curious as to, if you had to put the school's got the $20 million deal, right? So there's that, right? But now, what percentage of the money of all these kids are making? I'll say kids, even though they're is from the school and not from somebody else.
Well, there is the somebody else, but I would not imagine that the school would be in any way involved in any litigation for that to speak of. Now they might.
Well, they were UNLV. They were.
Let me finish. They might have been involved in arranging it, and connecting the people and getting things set up, but they would not have any legal standing as it pertains to trying to do a lawsuit to get any of it back, because it's not, they would be they would be not party to the agreement.
The guy in UNLV was the other way though. He didn't get paid, and he sued the school because he said they arranged it.
Well, did he sue him or did he just leave? I think he just left.
No, I think he just left.
He may have been suing based on a promise. I don't remember the case, so I don't want to comment really.
Well, remember he stopped playing in the middle of the season and then said he hadn't got paid for the first part. So I think there was some sort of a lawsuit. Now whether he got paid or not, and he named the coach and the assistant coach, saying you guys set it up. Which they probably did.
That was before they had this the settlement where the schools have a mini payroll.
Okay.
So it predated that. So as far as this specific conversation, I don't know that it's germane, but not necessarily relevant. How's that for?
Well, I think it sort of actually is, Kevin, because if the number is $4 million for a quarterback, say, and we've only got $1 million left in our $20 million pot, and we're going to arrange $3 million from some other place, I mean, I don't know if the law or the rule precludes you from doing that. And if the guy coming up with the $3 million says you're not good enough, I'm cutting out on mine, or whatever, I think there's some connection. I won't say where's Mr. Flanagan right there. Legally, if you're part of the setup, I mean, you're going to get named at least.
The question is, who is damaged, right? Who incurs the financial damages if the guy walks out on an endorsement contract versus just getting paid by the school? And they are supposed to do something on behalf of the school. There's actually a technical requirement that they do some real kind of promotion of some sort, which is I don't know what that turns out to be, but my point is that in bringing it up is that the school doesn't have standing if you have a deal with Nike or Under Armour or something like that.
So there's no restriction.
I mean, law in general, litigation in general, does its damnedest to boil things down to two parties rather than multiple parties.
Well, I mean,
that's just how it works, because it's the only way you're going to sort through all this crap.
I think that from what I know in arbitration in our business, if the coach introduces you to the auto dealer that pays you and he doesn't pay you, guess what? The coach gets named. I mean,
they get named. That doesn't mean they don't get thrown out of the lawsuit eventually.
No.
That happens routinely.
So there's no $20 million, there's no restriction that says if you want to give the quarterback the whole $20 million and give the girls nothing, that's totally your discretion, or the other guys in the team nothing.
Yeah, you have that ability.
It kind of, doesn't it go against Title IX or something?
Well, that's an interesting question, because the one thing that has never come up in all of this stuff that I've seen is Title IX. And now remember, Title IX is not necessarily it doesn't even anticipate compensation because it's been around so long that it doesn't even have a thought about compensation and how that factors into this. Sooner or later, somebody's going to push that button, though. But in the meantime, when you're talking about Title IX, it's just opportunity to compete, and that's where it has always been a factor. Now, opportunity to compete also included, and has historically included, the amount of money spent on the sports. So that becomes part of the part of the compliance reporting that the schools have to do, is they say, yeah, I spend not equal amount, because that's not the requirement, but they spend an amount, a significant amount of investment into women's sports like they do for men's. So you can't just say, I have the sport and see everything's fine, when they're all treated like, a separate entity of some
sort. Well, for another day, when they used to give a scholarship in our day, Kevin, in John's day, because he's just as old, it was about a $4,000 grant, maybe more like $2,000 at Ohio State, right? Well, now the grant at some of these places, the tuition and stuff, and even the little bit you get, your allowance during the season or whatever it is pushing $100,000 at some places, which is now essentially over twice the median income of the average American. Explain to me exactly why that's not income.
Well, it is income. Why it's not taxable income is your question.
Yeah, why don't you play Social Security on it? Why don't you play unemployment tax, those kinds of things?
Yeah, so that's it. And what's interesting is that, from the school standpoint, there is an expense there, but when it gets down to it, the marginal cost of having somebody in school is nowhere near the fully loaded tuition cost.
Yeah, but nobody else gets to count that way.
Well, no, of course not. And they don't when they're doing athletic department statements of their P&L statements in the athletic departments. They get the fully loaded cost. But all I'm saying is that if you look at it from as you make choices, you're making your choices on the margins, and you always do. You do in any business.
I mean, it's not like I'm pushing for this, but I always try and point out inconsistencies. Boy, it's easy to do that, isn't it? I mean, because on the other end of the spectrum, if you have say our buddy Hal, who evidently doesn't have a snow shovel, gets snow in Carolina, and he pays somebody, two homeless guys come by, and he pays them $600 a piece, which is a lot of money, to shovel the snow. If you're going to deduct that, you can give them cash, I suppose, if it's your house, but, again, theoretically, if you're going to deduct it and you give somebody and you say, I gave this guy $600, you're supposed to give him a 1099 and let the government know that you gave the guy $600. And it's the only money the guy ever made that year. He owes $90, the 15% for Medicare and Social Security. I think it's 15 or it's 14.9 or something. And yet, we let somebody get $100,000 worth of tuition and it's okay. I mean, I'm not saying I want people to start paying taxes, Kevin. I don't like paying mine. But the idea that we kind of have different categories for these things is really scary, isn't it?
In my opinion, I want a very simplified tax system that doesn't have, and we'd operate that at a much lower rate than what we'd what we'd have to do to accomplish the same thing. Because right now, when we our tax system has so many deductions, I always say with the businesses, there's a whole lot of businesses that they're able to depreciate away so much, they're able to take depletion allowances on things and so on, that you look at them and say, we're going to raise the business marginal rate. Well, you know what, go ahead, knock yourself out, raise the marginal rate, because if I get my net income down to zero times a higher marginal rate is still zero.
Well, I think the Dr. J and I had a huge debate one day, it's actually still on YouTube somewhere, regarding the tax system, and I don't think you can. I think the reason why it's complex is because people tried to find a way around the simple part, and the new tax system reacted by making it more complex, so people couldn't do that, and yet all of a sudden they did it even worse, then it became even more complex. So,
well, it may be from people trying to get over, but it's also from people who like to control things. And
that's true.
The easiest way to control is I get to write a paragraph into the tax code.
Well, if you can write one for your business, boy, it's terrific, isn't it?
Well, for your business, for your interest, for your supporters' business, you can pick the constituents who benefit from it.
Yeah. Or for your customer, somebody else, just flip it around and do it to your enemy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You can punish enemies, you can favor industries if you're an ideologue. So, you can do a lot of favoring. We've seen a lot of that with Green Agenda as an example.
Who was the Employee Retention Act? It was somewhere in that blur of the 3 years of total incompetence of Biden and Trump regarding COVID. And I don't know which one it landed under. Probably started under Biden and when it got signed. There was two. There was the first thing where they sent people paychecks. There was something called an Employee Retention Act. And all you have to do, I don't care what delineation you are, Democrat or Republican, but if you have a fourth grade education, and I don't usually read bills like Mr. Flanagan might, I read the first three pages of this bill, I immediately said, my God, a restaurant lobbyist wrote this thing. it was that obvious.
John, did you do that on your behalf of your favorite
restaurant? No, I think he did.
But this is, I think, the way every bill is crafted now. If you have any kind of suspicious gene in your body, you can see right away what lobbyist group or what industry or mega company was behind it, because it doesn't make any bones about it.
Well, what was the part about the essential business versus the non-essential business?
Oh, yeah.
Well, the people who had the essential business, like us, for instance, at a securities firm, we got totally screwed. Not screwed, but we got no benefit from the bill, and the people with non-essential businesses all did.
Right.
How's that for right off the top? Anyway, we have to go to break because we have to tell everybody what's going on in the world here. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 101 here. We're down actually a little more. NASDAQ futures down 470. Now, yesterday, we weren't down this much. We were down a bunch, and we somehow had this miracle buy the dip comeback, which I don't know where the hell that came from. But the war news kind of worsened during the day, and not so much didn't worsen in terms of what was going on, but it seemed like people's estimate of how long it was going to take. And the Strait of Hormuz thing sort of came in. Like Kevin said, it was pretty much closed to anybody because nobody's going to insure it. And now the Iranians say anybody's fair game that goes through it. So I don't know if anybody was going through anyway, but now they probably definitely won't. I don't know what the motivation of not going through is, but there is a motivation there. Over in Europe, serious whack over here. DAX down 800, that's over 3%, 3.25%. I mean, that's a big move. FTSE down 265, it's 2.5%. Heck around down 226, 2.7, almost 3%. So, like I said, those are good size moves. Over in Asia, Nikkei, which was down a bunch yesterday, is down another 1,700 today. That's over 3%. Hang Seng down 291, 1.1%. They're not reacting as badly. And Shanghai is down 59, 1.5%. So, China was supposedly getting screwed by not getting any of this oil. It doesn't seem to be doing as bad as these other people. Bonds of 4 basis points, 4.09. So, you would think there would be a rush to bonds, which would drop interest rates lower. Interest rates are up yesterday and today. So there's stuff here that doesn't figure, at least traditionally doesn't figure. Oil up 494, 76.17, so that's a big move, 6%, 7%. Brent up 552, 83.26. RBOB is up 12 cents to 249, so gas prices are going up, obviously. Gold was up this is what I don't get. It was up 100 points last night, and now it's down 105 this morning. So there's a big, big turnaround. And gold here is sort of like yesterday. Silver down 573. Both of these is, you know, kind of puzzling. Foreign exchange, the U.S. dollar is a lot stronger. The euro, it's 116. Yesterday was 117, so that's a big move. A British pound, 133. Last week, it was 135. Like I say, these are big moves. Crypto, which was up a bunch yesterday, is down 1,700 today. That's another issue why they were up yesterday with gold down. Ricky, what do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 6:35 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 35 degrees right now with a high of 40. A passing morning shower this morning, otherwise mostly cloudy. Tonight might have some areas of light drizzle, otherwise just cloudy with a low of 34 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 65 degrees right now with a high of 87. Mostly sunny and very, very warm. Tonight will be clear with a low of 58 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, there's an accident reported westbound on Dan Ryan I-94 before 71st Street exit 59C. Right center lane is blocked, so expect stop-and-go traffic and delays of up to 10 minutes. Traffic on Kennedy and Edens looks fairly normal. Eisenhower is clear now, but you might expect some delays tonight for the Bulls game at the United Center at 7 p.m. Lastly, mild traffic east on Stevenson starts just before Central Avenue. For sports, real quick, spring training has started for the MLB. Yesterday, we have the Cubs losing to Reds 17-9. White Sox lose to Giants as well 6-5. And today, we got Padres, White Sox at 5 p.m. For the NHL today, we got Blackhawks playing Jets in Canada at 7 p.m. And finally, Thunder at Bulls at 7 p.m. today, and Suns at Kings at 10 p.m. today. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back over to you.
Dudes, according to your buddies at AI, I stand corrected here. Iran relies almost entirely on the Strait of Hormuz to export its oil.
Okay.
90% of its oil. But don't they have a pipeline to, is it Russia or someplace? I thought they have one pipeline.
Go ahead, John.
I think, they have also a border the Caspian Sea, and, you know, Azerbaijan, former Soviet states, you know, have a lot of oil production in that area. I don't know what access Iran has to any of that. I would think they would have some. I mean, they're not, I would say, you know, desperate enemies of Russia, of any of their former states. But I don't know exactly what other sources they would have.
It says here their major oil terminals, such as Karg Island, are located in the Persian Gulf. So the passage has to go through the Gulf of Oman and the Strait of Hormuz. So I thought they had somewhere else they could get their oil out of there, like you, John, but maybe not, according to this.
Yeah, and they do also source from Russia, so they're, you know, they may ramp up there. But that's, you know, when... And we had some offline discussion of this, so we can open it up for anything. I think we're looking at, and just to sort of preface, you know, my opinion of the whole thing, I am not at all fond of any of these incursions that we have. And, you know, I think there's always the huge chance it'll blow up. As far as the markets and the ups and downs of the markets, I think people are trying to figure out if this is really going to be a short-term thing, or if it's going to go on for a really long time. I think that's going to, that perception is going to change almost by the minute. As you know, and there's always going to be news coming out. What's the expression? What's the first casualty of war?
Truth.
The truth.
Yes, it's the truth. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of information that's going to come out from a lot of directions, and I don't know what to make of it. All that said, it's happening. It's happening regardless of my opinion or anybody else's opinion of it. So, I think we're in the mode where you make your popcorn, sit back and watch the show and see what happens. I think the U.S. position is genuine in that it's genuine that they want to clip the wings of the Iranian regime, but I also think that there is a huge China factor in U.S. policy that doesn't exist in Israel's policy. It's not, you know, they don't have the same geopolitical concerns as it pertains to China specifically like the U.S. does. But I think anything that is going to disrupt China is considered part of the Trump agenda, and we're seeing it in... we saw it with Venezuela. somewhat. Doesn't mean China's not getting any oil from Venezuela, but they're not getting it in the same ways and the same ease that they did before. And I think you're going to see the same thing with Iran, and it's starting to show right now a little bit of what the implications might be. But because they're buying oil at a discount and they're very reliant on it, that anything that destabilizes their working agreements with the Iranian state and that raises their cost is going to be damaging to China. And I think that's part of the deal here for the U.S.
I agree, Kevin. And, you know, Carl was circulating emails yesterday about, well, you know, it's not going to make any difference, you know, because they'll find somebody else who will sell them oil, no matter who replaces the leaders. It's not going to make any difference as far as China is concerned. And I am not sure of that myself. I mean, I think just as people were taken aback by the suddenness and the precision, you know, of the raid on Venezuela to get Maduro out, which I think was primarily driven, you know, to block the Chinese. I think this is coming from the same mindset or the same battle plan. And it shares some of the same, you know, lead up to it, although there was tension, you know, it has been for weeks about where the negotiations were going. So it was not, I would say, a total surprise. But in some ways, the biggest, maybe it isn't a surprise at all that's come out of this is Britain's role in responding and the kind of response they've come up with, which is just, you know, it confirms everything I've felt about the Brits, you know, for the last couple prime ministers they've had, that they are not, you know, there's no special relationship anymore with the U.S.
Oh, no, they've been cut out of this completely.
Yeah, and they resented, I mean, now Starmer said they're denying access to the British bases in Cyprus, and the Greeks are, you know, more interested.
Well, the Greeks the Brits have followed us down a couple of thorny roads before, and they're kind of they're fed up with it. I don't blame them. Well, they followed us into Iraq, for God's sake.
I think they've been as much a party of steering us down that road as following us down that road.
Yeah,
I'm saying that's what I mean. They believed our bullshit in Iraq, and they lost people over there, and they're like, what are we even doing here?
Well, I think their lack of, you know, of interest in what we're doing now is purely politically driven. I mean, Nigel Farage had an interview today I saw with Sky News, and John Nolte, who usually writes about pop culture and Hollywood subjects in Breitbart, has a column today, Why England Sucks.
Well, you can have a definition of not following Trump and Netanyahu equals sucks, or you may not. I don't have that definition at all.
I understand, Tom, but, you know, the point, as John said, that the special relationship that we've, you know, always considered longstanding, I think is getting, has been very much dismantled in the last year or two.
And who did that?
Oh, United States is driving it. We don't want to go down the rabbit hole. You saw all that in the Davos speeches. You know that it's all right there if you want to see it.
Well, we've accepted
free speech, goal, you know, all. We got our values, our judicial system, everything from you, and look at how you've trashed it. And really, I mean, now I think Starmer is far more afraid that any, you know, siding with the U.S. against even something as evil as, you know, the Iranian government is going to offend the Muslims in England, who are becoming a bigger and bigger voting bloc all the time. And he's not, you know, Labour is in real trouble.
Well, you can have. I don't think anybody on this show or any show has any love for the Ayatollah and his gang of cutthroats. But the mechanism, you could easily say, well, you know, we're going to let these guys get to 90 and 95 years old. Hopefully they'll blow out. And if they get too rambunctious, we're going to buy them a nuclear facility once in a while, which has sort of worked really for 30 years on some level. Is it perfect? No.
Is it really?
Well, okay. Now, but I mean, there are ways under. Russia did everything they possibly could.
I don't mean to defend the incursion, Tom, but to say that the last 30 years have been an effective curtailment.
I didn't say. Okay. Well, we had Russia did everything they possibly could to kill our people in Vietnam. We never incurred on Russia. I'm saying there are other ways to deal with this. One is a full out whatever we're doing now. One is sort of what we were doing before. which was not perfect by any stretch. You're not going to get me to disagree with you on that. That they, you know, there's some level here of, you know, I'll use the term detente, waiting them out, economically strangling them. There's all kinds of options here. And this one, I think, is pretty extreme. Now, it may work, which would be, I guess, fine. But it's also pretty extreme. And it seems to have been done without the constitutional requirement of declaring war. And Mr. Flanagan yesterday was very articulate, saying, you can't go to Congress because they're a leak. Okay? Well, somebody put a huge bet down on one of these things Friday night, saying that there was going to be an invasion in the next 24 hours, and he made $150,000. And I mentioned that to a guy downstairs last night, and he's got buddies in Washington. He goes, I got a friend that went to, like, George Washington University. He called me up Saturday morning. He goes, he was in a bar in Washington. People there were talking about the thing was going to happen in, like, 2 hours. Now, we can't talk to Congress, but everybody in a bar in Washington knows it's going
to
happen.
Wait a minute. They did talk to the Gang of Eight in Congress earlier in the week, as well as right before the incursion. So, you know, that may support the idea that they will leak.
The only people that ever leak are the Democrats. This White House is tight as a drum.
No, Tom, any action by Trump, no matter what it is, domestic, international, doesn't matter anymore. It's a way of, you know, for the Democrats to, you know, pinpoint some kind of strategy to humiliate it, embarrass it, whatever. And this is the game plan they have. It's the only game plan they had, apparently. And if Trump had gone in without telling anybody about it, and 60 days later he was called on the carpet,
telling eight people is not the same as Congress is the only person to declare war.
I'm sorry, he told eight people.
People plus leadership.
So would you disband Congress?
No, but I would keep them out of this. This is my executive. It was now, chief.
Okay, now is this a Flanagan or is this an amendment?
I think it's the Constitution, Tom.
Okay, the Constitution.
War Powers Act.
That was not an amendment, by the way.
No, but that's what Trump is within the bounds of the War Powers Act.
Well, Trump, in your guy's opinion, he's within bounds of the Enabling Act, for God's sake.
Well, I don't care who the person would be. They'd be, if he did what Trump did, they'd be within the bounds of the act.
This is Trump
did it,
and in fact, have been in the past, because the last time we declared war was in the 1940s.
Right, and I'm saying, whoever did it before, I think is wrong. The Constitution's pretty clear. And I think the War Powers Act should have been an amendment, and it's not.
Then you're consistent, Tom, and good for you. You know, I can salute that.
Okay, so this is the third time a Republican, and I don't know if you know you want to put, has decided to change governments in Iran. Really? Third time in our lifetime? It's all in someplace halfway around the globe? Is this what we want to be doing?
You know my opinion on that. I've already shared it with you today.
I mean, I
is there legal ground to stand on? Yeah, I think there is. Do I like it? No. Because I don't like any of these soirees. So.
Well, what, I mean, we're not, I guess it's more of a Lou or Mike Murphy question, but has anybody ever been conquered by without boots on the ground? I mean, how long can we keep up this blast from sea in a couple of spots over there? I mean, Iran's a pretty big country. I mean, what if, I won't say shake this off, but, I mean...
Both the president and the secretary of state have said they won't rule out boots on the ground, although my guess is it would be pretty limited. But I don't want to see boots on the ground. But on the other hand, and I also don't know that they intend to or want to, but you're certainly not going to say I won't, you know, in the middle of the situation.
Well, I mean, we're talking about a Normandy invasion.
I wouldn't bank a lot of, a lot of credence on that. And well, I'm down to my last minute here. So
the overthrow of Mossadegh in 1953 was done without boots on the ground. Sometimes we had to put boots on the ground to enforce stuff we did before without troops, like in Nicaragua or Dominican Republic, to keep the power change that we had put in place there. Same thing happened in Ukraine, before the war started. I mean, this doesn't always involve a military expedition to get the government out.
Well, my question was, how long can we keep up the two aircraft carriers, all the stuff, all the missiles? What's the supply? I mean, if there was boots on the ground, are we talking a Normandy invasion from the Persian Gulf, for God's sake?
Look at the, you know, the DMZ. So how long is that going to go on? We've gotten pretty comfortable. It's going on 80 years now. So.
All right. So, I mean, it
hasn't changed a bit.
Well, my question is, and the market is asking the same thing today, what is the goal here? I don't know what the goal is. What if the guys that they put in power are just as bad as the other guys? Then what? I hope that doesn't happen, obviously.
No, nobody, I think, planned it for that to happen, certainly. Whether that happens or not, only time can tell.
Yeah,
but I think everybody was sick of the status quo, and with good reason.
Well,
we were asking the same question when it came to Syria, and so far that's been mostly harmless.
I don't know if it's out of the news. I think I'm with you, Kevin, but I really don't know. I haven't heard a serious story in forever. I mean, these places.
And I think, you know, that's probably a good thing.
I would think. My instinct is you're right, but stuff just seems kind of falling off the front and back page pretty quick, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. You know,
like you, Kevin, I would not have been in favor of this. This would not have been on a short or long list of things to do. But I'm deferring, I guess, is all I can say I can do. To judgments bigger than mine, more informed than mine, and you look at the timing, like I was talking yesterday, and the fact that I think this is China driven. It isn't just because we don't like China or we're afraid of what they're going to do. They're in deep, you know, blankety blank too, financially. You know, their infrastructure, the people. I mean, there's this open, you know. The government is about as shaky as it's ever looked to me, with the vanished generals, you know, the blown up commercial real estate market, the banking uncertainty, the natural disasters, the flooding. I mean, this is all part of the calculus that strategists use in deciding, well, here's the price we pay if we don't do something now and wait 4 years. Here's what could happen. Here's what shouldn't happen. But, you know, in any event, it boils down to we got to do it, and that's how these things happen, for better or worse. Not that they always have the best information.
Well, the news
they
all
always make the right decision.
Another aspect of China too, and to the extent that you can do damage to their economy through this whole process. And I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to hang right up because I got to go to a meeting. But you got Kenny in as well, so we need to get Kenny.
Well, Kenny's here, okay.
I'll say, to the extent that you do damage there, you know, you may deter their ability to do anything with Taiwan.
Well, the only problem with that point of view is everything I heard yesterday was that this was an Israeli operation, and we were talked into going with them.
Yeah,
I don't know about that.
I'm not entirely sure.
That might have been Trump's order to Netanyahu. Yeah, you know. I don't know. We'll
whatever.
Do this. But we don't want to be the point person because we're not going to tip our hand to anybody else.
Well, I don't know if we're that smart, but I hope we are. John, why don't you hang around? If you want to come out with Hal a little bit, that'd be cool. Kevin, enjoy your meeting.
Just about 5 or 10 minutes, Thompson.
Okay, we got Kenny. Let's get Kenny on. Kenny, what's going on in New York Stock Exchange? People wrestling each other out there or what?
No, there's nobody left there to wrestle each other. They're all gone.
Oh, God. That's probably not a good thing. Well, can you explain the initial surge in gold both of these days, only to turn around? I don't get that, do you?
Yeah, well, so, yeah, and I put in my notes this morning. You know, yesterday's initial surge in gold, on top of the surge it's already had, was naturally that flight to safety, that immediate first-time reaction after the weekend, and people, you know, you're right to the safety trade, which is exactly what we saw yesterday. But then the conversation turns, because you see gold is down today. It's trading back at 51, I think it's 51.50, down from the highs yesterday. But then the conversation yesterday turned to now the reinflation story, right? If they shut the Strait of Hormuz and oil rockets higher, which it is doing now, it's up another, I don't know, 8% this morning. It's almost at $78 a barrel. Then the story becomes focused on inflation. And if inflation ticks up, then, you know, bonds are going to sell off. Gold will sell off because the dollar now has gotten stronger. Look at the dollar. It's just kissing. It broke through all the trend lines. It's now kissing 100. It's got to bust up through 100, spot 50, and then it's going to surge higher. And if the dollar gets stronger, then commodities, as because of the inverse relationship, should come under some pressure. So that all makes some sense. That we're seeing gold come off. And look, gold has had this tremendous move over 3 years. And so I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if we see the dollar strengthen, that you'll see some money come back out of gold as a result. I don't think gold is collapsing by any stretch. I think the conflict is going to create, you know, this safe haven desire. So I think gold will continue to find a bid, but it will also react to a stronger dollar from the traders, right? The investors will just buy it on pullbacks, but the trader types will react to the stronger dollar.
What the stronger dollar is, and this is what, you know, I try and bring up all the time on the show, and I don't know if anybody ever figures out what I'm talking about, Kenny. You can look at the dollar as being stronger vis-a-vis the other currencies, right? Which is
right.
What's happening, and you're absolutely correct on that. But we're flat-ass broke, and this is costing like a lot of money per day.
100%.
And I'm going to say that this Federal Reserve guy and the new guy are going to print as much money as Trump wants, which...
Interesting, because you can't do both, right? I mean, you can do both because we've done it. But Warsh, I don't think, is in that camp. I don't think he wants to print money. I don't think there's an appetite to print money anymore after what we've been through over the last 18 years, from 2007 to 2023, when they kept printing, and they're still printing, I guess. But Warsh wants to pull that in, right? That's his focus, is to try to not print the money. But I guess with this war now that we've started, this conflict that we started, you know, maybe you're not going to be, maybe in fact he's going to have to continue to print money.
Well, I mean, right now today, there's only three ways you can spend more than you take in, right? One of them is tax for it, which they're not going to do. They're not going to do that. That's against the Republican mantra. You can borrow it, which maybe they'll do if they can, or you can print it. And I think that the easiest thing to do this week is to print it.
Well, you know, we might be printing it this week, but don't forget, Kevin Warsh is still not there yet. We might be printing it this week, but I'm still in the camp that Kevin Warsh is going to take much more control of that. You can't have it. He's going to say you can't have it both ways.
So, you want lower rates,
you got to rein in the balance sheet.
So you're in the camp that Trump's appointee is going to tell Trump no.
Well, okay, so this is the argument, right? What's he going to do? Is he just going to blindly go in there and follow Trump? Because if he is, then they're going to be accused of, you know, not being independent anymore. And it may be uncomfortable for Kevin Warsh, but guess what? He took this job knowing what he was getting into, right? I have to believe Scott Bessent, who I don't think is an idiot, is really going to be the adult in the room here alongside Kevin Warsh, who's going to have to say to Trump, you got to do it one way or the other. You can't have it both ways.
Well,
I think despite
Trump lambasting the guy, Powell, because Trump is Trump and does stuff like that, which if he was a fifth grader, he'd get him kicked around by his mother, but that's his style. The fact is, Powell's done everything he wanted him to do.
Correct. But Powell has done everything he's wanted him to do, although he won't. You know, he's certainly not, that's not what he's saying, because he wants rates to come down faster, even further. I don't think rates need, you and I have had this conversation. I don't think rates really need to come down. The economy is very strong. There's no reason to continue to stimulate an already strong economy. And look, now if we have this rise in oil, which is potentially going to reignite inflation because it'll raise transportation costs, it'll raise, cost at the pump, all that stuff, is that it's going to be difficult to argue, oh yeah, let's just cut rates in the face of this rising inflation. So Trump is going to have to, somebody's going to have to sit down with him and say, listen, you can't have it the way you want it at the moment, because now we've created this other problem, this conflict, which is going to cause probably inflation to spike a little bit. I don't know if it's going to be runaway, but it'll certainly spike a little bit, especially if oil continues to surge higher on the daily news.
Can I act like a monetarist for a second and nobody will ever believe me? The spike in oil does nothing against the general inflation level. These guys, it'll mean oil will go up, which when you fill more in a tank and gas, you'll spend less at the bar. But the what you got to gain, what you got to watch out for, is the money supply growth going from 4% to 7%.
Yeah, but wait a minute. If oil goes up, transportation costs are going to go up. Manufacturing costs are going to go up.
Yeah.
They're going to pass that. If that happens,
I understand that. What I'm saying is that happens all the time. Okay, that's a mark of a healthy or unhealthy. If there's no gain, if the money supply stays the same.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you get a spike from someplace like the Arab embargo of 73. Yes, oil is going to run up, but it's going to take money away from everybody else. So in theory, the general price level is going to stay pretty much the same. But if the counter from the government is, oh my God, we have to print a whole bunch of money to take care of this, that's what causes the general inflation level. You're right. If all of a sudden there's a cocoa shortage, and chocolate runs way up, okay, and every price of candy and the price of everything else, yeah. But in theory, the $5 more I got to pay for the box of candy, I have $5 less to pay somewhere else, unless the government says no, we're going to make up the $5, which is I think what they're doing. I mean, right now today we're broke, so for this guy to write checks and for the how many people yesterday on CNBC and Fox and everybody said, oh man, you got to buy defense stocks. Look how many missiles we've just used. How we got to go buy them again? I understand that, but the fact is, how are we going to pay for them? Now, if we're going to pay for them by taxing people, okay, that's one thing, but I don't think they're going to do that. Matter of fact, they tried to do it with the tariffs, and now they got shut down on that, at least on the first one. So that's been Trump's sneaky big tax increase that the MAGA people are too dumb to figure out, that this is really a tax on me. Somehow they believe this guy. I have no idea. Well, now he's lost that piece, and we're back to the 10 or 15% part. So that's still his tax. And it's a beautiful thing, Kenny, to be able to tax people and they don't know they're being taxed. it is so priceless. It shows you how much Trump has such a skill set in knowing how dumb people really are. You know, it's like Tom Sawyer telling how much he enjoyed painting the fence, right?
Yeah. Well, anyway, look, I think that, separate from all that, I think you can see it today in the markets. Markets are under pressure. Global markets are really under pressure. South Korea was down 7%, although they were closed on Monday, so it was their first day to react.
Yeah.
European markets are all down better than, some close to almost 4%. Spain's down 3.9%.
Wow.
And I fully suspect that we're going to trend lower. I think that the long-term trend line at 65-65 is absolutely in the bullseye. Not going to happen today, but I do think that we're now blasting through intermediate support today. We're going to absolutely test, I think, the long-term trend line. The question will be, will it hold? And by the way, if we trade all the way down to the long-term trend line, just to put it in perspective, that would make the S&P off 6.5% off its high, which is still well within what's considered normal. Yes, some stocks are getting absolutely crushed within. I get it. And that's where you're going to see opportunity, right? Because some of these names are mega cap, great companies that are being dislocated because they're easy to sell, they're very liquid, and that's when those names get dislocated, that's going to be the opportunity. I think people need to be, strategic. I don't think you need to make certainly emotional decisions, especially right now. You need to make sure that you're well-balanced and well-diversified and then take advantage when the opportunity presents itself.
Well, the problem with some of this is, so many stocks, boy, Kenny, we deal with a lot of concentration issues.
Yeah.
Man, we get, so many stocks have been annihilated.
Yeah.
God bless. Obviously Microsoft's a big holding for a lot of people. The thing's down from what, 520 on the high?
Yeah. Yeah, where's it trading now?
395. It's under 392. So,
yeah.
I would never have guessed that. Yet I look
No, it was actually lower. That's up from where it was. It was even lower than that.
Well, I look at NVIDIA now at 178. It traded 203 on Thursday.
Yeah.
So that's, what is that? $25. Well, it's 25 billion shares outstanding. So every dollar is $25 billion.
Yeah.
But the thing I look at, I went through, it must have been like 195 or 200, so it's gotten better, I guess, from now. I still had them at 16.8 times revenue.
Yeah.
Kenny, that's amazingly high for a stock that's that big. I mean, whatever they do, whatever they don't. I mean, it's 16 times PE is a big number, but revenue is like, ugh. I mean, how do you even come close to that?
I'm looking at it right now. It is sitting directly on its 200-day moving average, right? It broke down through short and intermediate term, which are really converging. They converged up at the 186 level. It's now sitting right on its 200. The last time we tested the 200 was in early February. We came right down, tested it, and bounced. It's going to be very interesting today to see, considering the tone of the market this morning, will it hold or won't it hold? And if it breaks down below the 200-day, that's going to cause the algos to shift into, you know, the algos that respond to technical breaks in the market will shift into overdrive. The question is, will the bulls defend it, or will they step aside and let the selling take hold? Because listen, the buyers who are certainly risk on, they'd love to buy it at cheaper levels. So the question is, are they going to defend it right here, or are they going to let it break?
What so
that'll be telling.
How does the fact that we are, you know, I talk a lot the margin levels that you and I are, you know, that we can find out are the FINRA numbers. We were at record margin levels, all right, as of last month, right? I guess we still probably are. Is that a problem somewhere in here? I don't know. But that's what do you make of, you know, since we have 401ks around, I don't know if I've ever asked you this, by the way, don't go anywhere until you look at this IBM graph. I can't believe that the thing touched right down to the number in April and bounced off it. I don't know if you saw that or not. Well, it's just check. Pull up an IBM chart.
Yeah, wait. I'm looking at it.
And it's absolutely incredible. I'm not a chart guy like you, but I'm like, first thing I said is I got to ask Kenny about this.
IBM pulled right back down to the lows that it saw in April of 25, right? And it found support there. It has now bounced again. Yeah, I listen. I love IBM. I own IBM, to be fair, right? So I'm talking a little bit. I'm talking my book, but I view this as a huge opportunity in IBM.
Okay, because I don't think they're anywhere near the crazed ratios that some of these other ones are.
No, right. But I think that, you know, I'm going to watch it today and see what happens. I wouldn't be surprised if the market continues to come under pressure like this. You know, could we back test again 220 level? Sure, we could. But even there, anywhere in here, I would be a buyer of IBM. I think IBM's great.
Well, boy, it's a quick trip down from 310, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it was very quick. And I think a lot of that was tied to, you know, the whole AI trade about disrupting the consulting business, disrupting technology. And so IBM really took a hit on the back of that news. But again, I think that was, while I think it's going to, I think AI will continue to disrupt, you know, markets and industries, I don't think it's going to put IBM out of business.
No, I don't think so either. But to get back to the margin question, what is your, I mean, when we, when this kind of happened in 87 and other kinds of times, which I remember because I was there, it was not a good day. Margin really was, if you ask somebody, what about, you know, what's the margin on the market? You kicked up the Fed used to put the numbers on those days. Now FINRA puts them out. That's the number you put there. But that was kind of before 401ks, before IRAs. You know, they were going, but nobody really had a lot of money in them. I'm not so sure they were even going. They were like keel. Anyway, but now, What is your feel? You know, I'll ask you. What is your feel about the? I use the term indirect margin, where it's not just specific stuff, where somebody calls up, you know, PTI or Merrill Lynch. Notice how I put us in the same sentence, Kenny, and wants to buy 1,000 IBM and sends us a check for half of that. Well, I don't think we've ever had anybody like that here. But other firms, that's where they make all their money, right? Because you make your money on the interest, not really the.
But you can't send half. You have to send it all.
But I'm saying there are places that a lot of their people, everybody's on margin, and they make a lot of money on it. But that's not the question. The question is, how much kind of implied margin? When I say that, I think we would both agree, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, that over the last certainly 17, maybe 25 years, people's income is not necessarily, that's not where they get their wealth from. I mean, there's very few people that make $100,000 a year that aren't spending the $100,000 and putting $10,000 in the bank. You know, it's not like when you and I were kids, the parents made $100,000 a week and put $10,000 in the bank. That's how wealth was built. And I just question how many of the $85,000 cars that are being sold or pickups are being bought by people who really wouldn't buy them if they didn't have $1.5 million in their IRA or their 401k that they use as a backstop to just about everything, where they're putting a $200,000 addition on the house and getting a loan for that. In the back of their mind was, well, if I really have a problem, I can pull money out of my IRA or my 401k that I've rolled into an IRA. And even though I don't want to do it, it's sort of my backstop. And if all of a sudden the backstop starts to sink,
yeah.
I wonder how much it affects stuff we never even dreamed. I got this from Nancy when she heard that somebody got a second mortgage on her house to buy Bitcoin. I never dreamed. I guess maybe I should, that something like that. But how much of that is going on? I mean, how many people have levered the rest of their business because of their stocks?
I would like to think after the disaster we saw in 2007 and 8 that people are smarter than that. Although there's a generation of people that are now coming of age that, you know, maybe didn't have the same experience, and so yes, could that be? I don't think there's anyone our age maybe it's just me. I just don't think so. I think there's a younger generation that might be doing that, and clearly you and I can say not the smartest decision in the world, but everyone has to learn on their own, right? They got to learn on their own.
It's not the smartest, but how many people you and I remember 17 years ago like it was yesterday? If you're 32 years old, you're not going to do that.
That's what I mean. So there's this generation that don't remember it, and so therefore, like everyone, they're going to have to learn it. They're going to have to learn it their own way, right? They're going to have to get burnt and say, oh, wow, maybe that was such a great decision. Because, you know, they won't listen to people like you and me because they'll think that we're dinosaurs and we don't understand the new world and blah, 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 blah.
Well, right? I mean, when I started in the business, it was end of 1980. And the big talk even then was what happened like a year and a half before, was late 1978, where IBM blew up to the upside on like an October expiration, so whatever October expirations IBM used to have. And I don't know if you remember the slogan, sell the 280s and buy a Mercedes.
Yeah.
And so people would sell the 280 calls in IBM just before it split. And essentially, they would sell them, and they'd find out it was Mercedes. At the time, cost probably $25,000. And they'd sell $25,000 worth of those things, and you bought a Mercedes. And if you wanted a radio, you sold one extra call, you know, type of thing. I mean, literally, that's what people did. And all of a sudden, one month, these 280 calls were at a 16th, and people could have bought them in at a 16th of a dollar, which would be, you know, 0.625 now. And they closed at like 30 or something. It was one of the biggest changes of equity on the floor ever. Now, people would say that, you know, I heard those stories, but in 1984, it didn't stop a bunch of guys from selling out-of-the-money calls. I mean, you heard about the tragedy, and you go, well, I'm smart enough to avoid that one, and on we go. You know, it's not like people hear history, but how many people actually learn from it?
Well, that's the question. You have to learn from it. And, you know, there are people that do learn from it, and there will certainly be other people that never do. And, you know, that's kind of like an age-old story, right?
Well, yeah, I'll
get
you.
There are those that do, and there are those that don't.
What do you make of, I would never, there's a few things about this, you know, other than the fact that maybe we did it in the first place. I'm kind of surprised the knee-jerk reaction would be for bonds to rally and rates to go down. You know, 2 days in a row now, it's going the other way.
Well, because I think that's the inflation story. That's what I said. That's what I just said, right? If people are worried about inflation ticking up, then bonds will back off and rates will rise, which is exactly, I think, what the market at the moment is telling you. But I think a lot of that is also kind of an initial nervous reaction to what's happening. If this thing should end and the Strait of Hormuz is not closed and oil starts to flow again, you'll see pressure on oil prices decline. But until that happens, you're not going to. So that they're going to use that, or that inflation story is now going to be the new narrative. And look, we start primaries today in Arkansas, Texas, and North Carolina. Don't you think the Dems aren't going to come out swinging that, look what they did, to use this to their advantage for sure?
Well, I mean, why not? Everybody does that, right?
Right, correct. All right, but listen, I got to jump because I got to get ready for another call in 5 minutes.
All right, buddy, you take care of yourself.
All right, see ya.
Ricky, do we have Professor Hal?
Yes, we do.
Hal, how are you?
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
All right, hey, from the military side, I mean, I don't know whether Iran's threat to go after a ship in the Strait, it was pretty much effectively closed before that because insurance companies, I guess, weren't. If you were the military attaché to Lloyd's of London, what would you have to see to say it's okay to insure the next ship?
Well, yeah. I haven't even thought about that question, but there's a risk, obviously. I think that risk is going down. You see all these missile launchers by the Iranians being destroyed with laser-guided precision. So maybe right now they're not going to get insured, but I think...
Well, but is it you're thinking a week or 2 weeks?
War is over. I think it'll be maybe safer. I mean, Iran's not making any friends. They're sending missiles to their Arab neighbors, so... I think the Saudis and the other and its neighbors are probably happy about this. I can't say that I am. I don't think war is a solution to anything. So,
well, if one of them ever worked out as planned,
the thing I'm worried about are the Iranians. Any radical pro Khomeini Iranians that are in our country right now, what are they going to do? You saw a guy go into a bar Sunday morning or Saturday morning and shoot some people up in Austin, Texas.
Well, this is not a... I sure as hell can't speak for everybody, hell, but the Iranians that I have met here are so happy to be here. So, and they couldn't stand those people.
But I'm talking about the pro-Khomeini faction, which is a very small one relative to the population.
I'm going to say... I won't say there aren't going to be 50 of them someplace.
Yeah.
But I can't. If you're so pro,
Anti-Khomeini ones, they're celebrating. I have a colleague. I know of a colleague who is from Iran, and he's no fan of that regime, and he's probably crying with joy that the guy's dead. You know, so
except you only hope that the next guy behind him isn't worse.
Yeah, usually what happens is when we do these interventions, the guys that follow are worse.
Yeah, well,
much worse because they're the ones that survive.
That's why that's why the Brits took out Heydrich, right?
They're the roaches that survive, and those roaches that survive are the ruthless ones, right?
Well, for those that don't remember your World War II history, as bad as Hitler was, he had some total loser that was his right-hand man, his Reinhard Heydrich, who was actually worse than Hitler.
Yeah, you think about it. I mean, you've got a guy that wants to climb the Nazi ladder in Germany that survives.
I think we have a few
all
people.
These attacks.
I think we have a few people in line here that are worse than Trump.
That dude's going to be even worse than Hitler, right? He's trying to impress Hitler.
Well, yeah. So the Brits took him.
He's sold on that vision.
Yeah, the Brits took him out.
Yeah.
Because they figured if anything ever happened to Hitler, this guy'd be worse.
Yeah, the dictator, like Lenin, was bad, but Lenin backed off his communist policies when he discovered the 19,000% inflation.
Yeah.
He backed it off, and then Stalin replaced him, and Stalin was a freaking monster, man.
Well, Lenin, his last year, actually turned the Soviet economy pretty much around.
I mean, I don't think Stalin liked it too much.
No, he didn't like it
too
much.
He wanted the Serbs to be pissed. He wanted them to be upset.
You know,
he needed that anger, right?
You ever read Armin Hammer's book? Armin Hammer was, you know, whether you liked him or didn't, had to be somebody on the planet that knew these guys more than like anybody else. I mean, I don't want to go into Armin Hammer's life history, but he bounced around. He was successful in a lot of these places and knew all these people. And they asked him one time, who are the two smartest men you ever met? And he goes, that's easy. The first one was Roosevelt. So the second one was Lenin. On an individual basis, he said the man was brilliant. Because he changed.
Yeah, a lot of times though, the brilliance of people combined with politics.
Oh, I didn't say he was perfect.
Oh
no, God,
that can be a nasty.
But I mean, he was smart enough to realize that his first shot wasn't working, and he changed. His point was in 1 year he hadn't been to Russia in a year. It was horrible when he left. When he came back, all of a sudden it was almost, whatever economics, it was like China opening up all the markets and stuff. You know,
Lenin would have been a lot sharper if he understood the world that Marx grew up in.
Yeah, yeah.
And the world of the West, in the world of Russia, in the post serf culture of Russia, things were really bad, and a person growing up there would find it very difficult to understand what free markets can do. And so I think it would have been much smarter if he really understood the differences between what Marx called capitalism and what I consider to be free market capitalism. In free market capitalism, the government does not intervene in the voluntary exchanges of goods, services, and ideas among consenting adults. It does not. Now, we don't have that system. Today, we have more.
Yeah, we do in a few spots, we do.
There's a few spots, but it's mostly neo-mercantilism.
Right.
Yeah. Where the government creates these monopolies through its regulations and rules and licensing.
You just got through teaching a history of economic thought. I have an attorney friend of mine. We're always talking about, obviously, world stuff going on. Why we're doing that, I don't know. But his point was I forget one country, whatever the country of the week was, where we did something for a regime change or something. I don't know if it was Libya or some damn place. And we decided, you know, we're gonna have elections there and turn it into a democratic society. So this guy's point was, you can't do that. There's no history.
There's no culture.
He says there's no history of if you lose, you actually leave office. You know,
yeah.
We'll see if that happens this time here. But here the guy loses and he leaves, right? I mean, yeah. He goes, there's no culture to that. Look at Venezuela. You know, the guy lost and didn't leave. And he goes, and there's also no culture to, if your party gets their ass kicked, okay, you heal up for 2 days, and then you say, okay, what do we do wrong? And you start again, and you're something called the loyal opposition, where you're opposed to the party in there, but you're still in the same country.
Yeah, I don't think there's much of a loyal opposition.
I don't. But he says, there's not so much here like we used to have, but he goes, in these places, if you don't have those two things, if nobody knows what the hell you're talking about, what does the election even do?
Well, you have to have, I think there has to be like years of rule of law.
Well, so
rule of man. You want rule of law.
Yeah.
People are treated equally under the law. And there's not a lot of that going around the world.
But I'm saying China, I've never been there, but Russell and people tell me.
Were talking about China earlier?
No, I
think China's getting crushed because it bought into this Keynesian nonsense. I mean, what we did to get the financial crisis of 2007 and 8, they poured it on.
Yeah.
I mean, they went all in on that stuff. And they got cities that nobody lives in. I mean, their provincial governors were told, you got to get 9% growth. So they're building things that nobody's going to use and nobody's going to live in. So it's
that's the mark of a managed economy. Like the Russians used to pay, per pound for nails. Guess what? They didn't get any tax. They got a bunch of railroad spikes.
Yeah, I was reading an article about nails in Russia, and the orders are coming from the Kremlin about they needed all these nails, and so the nail producers not responding to market forces, but responding to centralized planners at the Kremlin, built these nails that would not work.
They were heavy,
just building them.
They were heavy.
I think they're building them to be excessively large.
Yeah, because
they were paid by the pound.
They were paid by the pound.
Yeah.
So they were making railroad spikes and that tax.
Nails that nobody could use.
You heard a story about the, I told this before, but I'll be brief. Story about the Canadian hockey team that went over there years and years ago. It was the first time. You know, people. It was right
before the wall fell.
Sort of in that time.
Yeah.
And so, they used to when you made chandeliers, you got paid by the pound. So these Canadian hockey players are staying in this hotel, you know, probably in the Kremlin someplace, and so one guy was convinced there was a bug in the room, so he's looking all over, and all of a sudden he sees this bump in the carpet. So he pulls the carpet back, and there's this metal plate. Well, the chandelier is so heavy from the room downstairs that you couldn't just, you know, use an outlet box like you can here, right? You had to actually put a plate on the floor above it to hold it. So the guy starts unscrewing the plate, thinking that that's the bug, and all of a sudden he hears this huge crash in the room downstairs. The chandelier didn't land on somebody's head, thank God. But crashes.
Oh, man.
But I mean, it
kind of reminds me of that Ghostbusters scene.
Well, so my question to you is, if all of a sudden Russia today, Mr. Economic Thought Teacher, if all of a sudden, you know, it won't happen to Putin, but say Putin gets ixnayed, and there's some other guy comes in and goes, yeah, we're gonna turn this into like a market economy, would the average Russian have any idea what they were doing? I mean, the Chinese, when they did that, Chinese have always been.
I've seen video of Russia's, like, of Moscow, and it seems pretty cosmopolitan and modern. So, you know, maybe it. I don't know. I've never been to Russia.
Me neither. But
I know is my great uncle Doug. He went to Russia right before the wall fell, and he met this boy that ended up being his son-in-law after he came to the United States when he got his visa. The boy took him to him and his wife. This boy took him to this grocery store or several grocery stores in Moscow, and the only thing on the shelves were like potatoes and vodka.
Because, well, big on vodka here. Big on vodka here.
Yeah. That's all they had was potatoes and vodka. That was it.
What more do you need?
Right, exactly, yeah. I mean, you got the government setting the prices. So you got the government setting the prices too low of every other product. So you got none of it. And you got the price of vodka and potatoes higher than the market price. So you got plenty of it, right? So that's just part of the problem. But, you know, from what I could tell, I mean, Moscow, from the video I've seen, maybe, you know, Putin's only showing us the richer neighborhoods, but their grocery stores seem pretty filled. So maybe in Russia they've adopted some of that, but surely they got all kinds of cartels. And
if all of a sudden you opened it up, how long would it take for three guys sucking down their vodka going, hey, we looks like we need these smaller nails. There's a building over there. It used to be a factory. Let's go to the bank and get a loan. Did the bank even know how to give a loan to a person? I mean, what is it, all the factors of production that we're sort of used to being there, how long would it take for the banker even to know, wait a minute, am I supposed to give you a loan? What's a loan?
The funny thing about this, though, is no matter how many barriers government puts in place, it seems like markets tend to want to work.
And
you look at the history of the mafia, whether it be like the Jewish mafia, the Sicilian mafia, all of those guys and even in England, most of the markets were functioning outside of government restrictions via smuggling.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That's probably where the mafia comes from.
That's my question.
People probably trying to satisfy demand.
I'm not getting it out too good, but that's my question. In China, there always was this undercurrent of free market.
Markets are trying to.
I don't. From what I understand, it's nowhere near the same in Russia. It's been way too long. I guess that's the question I'm trying to ask. How long would it take for them?
Well,
the Chinese,
even under Russian iron-fisted control from the Kremlin during the Soviet Union, I mean, you had music pouring over the borders. And a lot of people credit the fall of the Soviet Union to heavy metal music that made its way in with these pirated cassette tapes. And, you know, I don't know if you remember this, but Metallica played in Moscow back when the wall fell. And there were 2 million people at that concert.
Really?
So you go on YouTube and look up Metallica 1991.
Where do they hold the concert?
I don't know how it was logistically handled, because there were no restrooms. I don't know how they were fed or how people got water, but there are literally 2 million people.
What's the biggest
at this concert in 1991?
What's the biggest concert here ever? Wasn't it Simon and Garfunkel in Central Park? Was that like 800,000, or how many were there?
Yeah, well, Van Halen played to 300,000 people in California back in '83.
But it's still not 2 million.
Go on to YouTube and look at Metallica 1991 Moscow. It is a sea of people. Right, there's got to be at least 2 million people.
Right, so why didn't Hal and Chief have the Portalette contract?
Well, at the time I was in the Navy, so I was barred from free market activity. Well,
let me ask you a vodka question. I've heard tell that, you know, in Russia and maybe in Poland and other places, if you go down the vodka aisle, there's like 100 and some brands of vodka.
Yeah, that
how
makes
much
sense.
Vodka, it's not like, I'm going to show my ignorance here, but it's not like bourbon where there's a million different kinds of wood and all kinds of different, this was 4 years, this was 6. Isn't vodka pretty much the same? I mean, how do you differentiate the 150th brand?
I guarantee you Russians probably know how to differentiate vodka like people in San Francisco know how to differentiate.
Well, I know there's potato vodka, there's grain vodka.
Have you ever seen Sideways?
No.
With Paul Giamatti?
Well, you know, there's only one potato vodka left.
Yeah.
Which is surprising. Anyway, we're going to go to break here in a minute, but then we're going to come back just a little bit. A lot of things about this sell-off don't... The turnarounds in gold and silver both days, the fact that interest rates are up, not down, some of this stuff wouldn't
be what
you predict.
Well, I have treasury yields. I just checked treasury yields, and they seem to be heading down.
Well, the 10-year rate is... Yeah, 10-year rate
maybe
is
things
up
are worse other places, but I have treasury yields. I just checked. I have this dynamic yield curve.
Well, the 10-year's up. So this obviously is being considered by people to be inflationary, which, duh, it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, where are we getting the money for? You know, John and Kevin earlier on were talking about how we don't like the Brits anymore, okay, because they're not following us down these roads. But you know what? I was talking to some guy last night at the local emporium. How much can you piss off people that you owe money to? In the last year, the Chinese have dropped their investment in the U.S. treasuries by $100 billion.
Somebody's buying them, Tom.
Okay, it's been totally made up by increase from U.K. So how much do you want to insult the U.K. when we owe the guys $800 billion? I mean, it's not like they're not...
Well, you got to remember, though, the person that lends the money wants the money paid back, right? And the people that are borrowing the money want to borrow money in the future. So it's kind of a two-way thing there. I'm not sure who has more power politically in that transaction.
I mean, obviously, if you owe somebody $10, he owns you. If you owe him $10 trillion, you owe him. I mean, there's no...
Yeah.
But that's, you know, it's kind of a joke from the trading.
But you got to remember who's doing the borrowing. The mob is, in our case, because... We have the biggest, baddest military on the planet. So, I mean, that'd be like Capone borrowing money from somebody and then saying, I may not pay you back. He's got that mob behind him, right? He's got the force of violence. He's got monopoly.
Last time I checked, we pay these people in the army, and we buy and we pay for the shells.
No, I'm just saying that we're the borrowers, the administration, they have this massive military behind it, and it Whether you like the war in Iran or not, you got to admit that it's pretty impressive show of power.
That's a totally separate subject. I mean,
we're borrowing money from Britain.
Money from everybody. We're broke.
I know, but you're saying Britain's buying all these treasuries, right?
Well, I'm saying,
and you're saying they have the power, but
I
you got to remember that we have the world's greatest military.
Okay, so.
Rather
than pay him, we're going to nuke London. I don't know where you're going.
No, I'm not saying we're going to nuke anybody. I'm just saying that we have this really impressive military, and it changes the equation on who really has the power.
Okay, but we are also sinking dramatically into debt, which is...
Well, I know, yeah. Well, it's been going on since the late 1990s.
But it's reaching kind of a crescendo here. I think there's a point...
Yeah, if you remember Paul Krugman wrote about how Bush was... being irresponsible, driving up these deficits and this debt, and then Obama comes into office, and he's like criticizing the Obama administration for not having too much debt. So this has been like a 20-30 year.
Okay, but I understand that if you and I, if we could ever get our act together and not argue all the time, if we went on national TV, some attractive young lady is going to say, "You two idiots, you've been saying this for 25 years, how we're going over the cliff, and yet we never seem to go over the cliff. So you guys are idiots." But the fact
we're
is,
we're going over the cliff. It's just the Federal Reserve has found ways to
right.
keep that inflation.
And what I'm saying
up.
Right now, we've done it on the backs of people. We've done it on the backs of people because of inflation and other things. We've printed the money, which you and I think agree on. Well, I think we're accelerating, and like Carl says, we're starting to go exponential here. And you know, I mean, what did Greg Pappas, who I think probably be on again next week, he was doing producing the show. He helped us out for like 2 years. In the first year, Greg pulls out his stopwatch. Of course, he uses his phone instead of a stopwatch, and he times the debt clock and how long it took for like $1 million of debt, and I think it was like 46 seconds or something.
Yeah.
So he does it again 18 months later, and they're down to like 36 seconds. It's like we're pissing away $1 million 25% faster. In like a year and a half. What do you think it is now? I mean, I'll bet I'll do it on break. S&P futures down 112. Nasdaq futures down 522. I'll see.
Probably in a second. I don't know.
No, it's, well, where did I put my? I don't know. I got my stopwatch somewhere.
$38 trillion, right?
I'll see if I can do it here. If I can find my stopwatch, we'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it. You could junk it. or you can donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-639-8620. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It'll be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car. And as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-639-8620. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-639-8620. That's 1-800-639-8620.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here.
Hello, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. Tom out, Ricky on the board. Let's see, where the hell am I here? I'm at, my God, hell, 21 seconds.
21 seconds? Okay.
That's for $1 million on a national debt clock. That's worse than my... Why didn't you make me do that? Now I feel even worse that I did it. I didn't think it was that bad, but it's obviously that bad. Anyway, we have S&P futures. What?
Just go to the local Irish pub and drink a beer.
That's not a bad idea. You know what they're doing? Who's the I hate these terms like this. Who's the moron that put Election Day on St. Patrick's Day?
Yeah, we don't want that.
No. And you know, next year, Super Bowl is on Valentine's Day. Do we have a dumb class somewhere in this country? Anyway, S&P futures down 116, which is about the low here. NASDAQ futures down 534.
I dropped off.
No, Dow down 714. Over in Europe, we got some whack here. I think we're down almost, we're over 3% here as soon as my machine wants to work. There we go. DAX down 854. That's 3.5%. That's worse than we did an hour ago. It was only 3%. FTSE down 274, 2.5%. CAC around down 239, 2.9%, almost 3. Asia, Nikkei down 1,700, that's over 3%. Hang Seng down 291, that's only 1%. Shanghai down 59, that's 1.5%. So not as bad there. This I don't quite get, as the interest rates are going up, not down. You would expect the other way. I'm talking about the short term, I'm talking about the 10-year. 10-year is 4.09. Oil is up 498. It was actually up a little bit more than that earlier. That's 7%, 76.21. Brent up 560, 83.39. RBOB up 12 cents to 249. RBOB was like $2 or 205 a couple weeks ago, so get ready to pay more at the pump. Gold, which was up like 100 and some dollars last night. Now it's down 134. So it's 51.77. It's still up there. Silver down $6, which is 7% move. Silver, that's a lot. Foreign exchange. Well, the dollar is actually up to the pound. The euro is down under 116, so that's like a 1.5% move in a couple days. That's a lot. The pound's down to 133. It was over 135. So, crypto, which was up yesterday somehow, is down today $2,100 at 67,000. A lot of moving parts here. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:37 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 35 degrees right now with a high of 40. A passing morning shower, otherwise mostly cloudy. Tonight might have some areas of drizzle and a low of 34 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 65 degrees right now with a high of 87. Mostly sunny and very warm. Tonight will be clear with a low of 58 degrees. Traffic in Chicago is already starting to pick up. Traffic starts at Cicero Avenue on Eden's inbound. There's low and heavy traffic on both sides of Kennedy, about 43 minutes from O'Hare. Eisenhower, Stevenson, and Dan Ryan inbound are also experiencing some heavy traffic, so expect some delays. For sports real quick, spring training has started for the MLB. Yesterday we saw Cubs lose to Reds 17-9. White Sox lose to Giants as well 6-5. And today we got Padres and White Sox fighting it off at 2:05 p.m. For the NHL, we got Blackhawks playing at Jets at 7 p.m. And finally, for the NBA, we got Thunder at Bulls today at 7 p.m. and Suns at Kings at 10 p.m. Back over to you guys.
I saw this thing last night. I don't want to go crazy on it, but it was a Tucker Carlson interview from this lady on there, and I don't know exactly what her status was, but she was an expert. She was an expert on international money flows. And the you know, and she was talking about how the group of central banks, which you are always railing about, whoever they are, whether it's the Davos group or whoever, I don't know that they're Republicans or Democrats. I suspect they're neither.
I don't think they're either.
So, but her point is they want to control the entire world by controlling the money that everybody spends. They want to know what everybody's doing, like at all different points. And they're relentless in this. And they've gotten a thing with the young people here. The only one is convenience. They don't care. They're willing to give up essentially all their anonymity. I won't say freedom, but anonymity for convenience. And she was talking about, you look at the countries that, and she didn't say that Trump was in on this. Or maybe she thinks he's dumb enough to just go along with it or whatever. I mean, she didn't mention the guy. But she said, if you look at the people that everybody's targeting, are you
talking about Catherine Austin Fitz?
I'm not sure which. Maybe a middle-aged lady at least, maybe in her 60s.
Yeah. She worked in the Treasury Department during like the Clinton years.
Okay, maybe. So
a while ago, I think.
And she said, if you look at the places that people are targeting, so Iran is probably the single biggest place.
Oh, no, she worked for H.W. Bush.
Okay, yeah, she's up there. So she, that the single biggest place of leakage where you can't control who's doing what to who is Iran. So, yeah, it might, she goes, there's some oil going there. It's fact they do dirty deals on other places. But she goes, the real money behind it, the real drive, is this worldwide view that somebody wants to control what anybody else in this world does. That if Hal has a $10 bet with the chief on a golf game and he loses, they want to know about it. And I wonder, is she off a rocker? Is she too far advanced? Does she have a point? Some does seem like people want to have information on stuff that everybody does. And that makes my hair stand up on the back of my neck. But other people seem okay with it. I don't get it. You know, I don't know.
As long as the tyranny is from your team, you're okay with it.
Yeah, well,
if the tyranny is from a different team, you're not okay with it. That's kind of how it generally works.
Well,
right?
That's the part that I, you know, obviously there's a little bit of tension on the show between the, the Trumpers, which I put you, or Republican side or whatever, versus...
I'm a Libertarian. I'm not either.
Okay,
camp.
I'm saying, for me, what I don't get is...
I'm in my own... I have my own political party.
Well,
I have my own school of thought. I'm in the Neoclosterian School of Economic Thought, and I'm a little...
Wherever that is, whatever closet that is.
Neoclosterian is neoclassical, interpreted from the Austrian.
All right, I'm going to say you're a closet monetarist, but that's okay.
Pragmatic Austrian.
Yeah, yeah. God. But I'm saying, for me, I obviously vote for somebody one way or the other. I've probably voted for as many Republican presidents as I have Democrats. But what I don't get is, if I vote for somebody, I don't have this ego that somehow it's my job to, even if the guy does something really stupid, to try and find a way where it makes sense because I voted for him. I don't get that at all. I mean, yeah. I voted for Obama. I thought the way the Obamacare thing was done, without addressing costs, and by the way, without having anybody on the other side of the aisle sign up for it, which means that for the next 25 years, all people are going to do on the other side of the aisle is criticize it, and it'll never get fixed. Well, was I right or not? The other side of the aisle does nothing but criticize it. It never got fixed, and it didn't address costs. So I didn't vote for Obama the second time. I didn't feel my obligation to sit there and go, Obama's my man. Here's a million reasons why this was the right thing to do. It wasn't. Yet, yeah. I don't understand on the MAGA side now, and by the way, on the Democratic side too as well.
Well, Trump has done a pretty good job of selling himself as a guy that is going to crush this the deep state. And I think people who vote for him are really committed to that vision. Well, that's kind of, I think, where he gets his source.
But that's
power.
That's my biggest complaint about people.
I think that's what they really like about him. But I think they also like about him is he feels authentic, right?
Well, he's not. He's not.
Yeah.
But
he feels like it to them.
But I'm saying the part that concerns me about the population is that they've let the guy define the playing field. You know, these people that have come over the border, they're the source of all your problems. Yeah. They're all criminals. People here, they never thought that the poor Mexican guy down the block was their enemy before. just like Hitler was so damn good at, the Jewish dentist down the block is now your enemy. Nobody ever thought until he told you that he was your enemy. You never dreamed it, did you?
I mean, I think, but you know, you have to really get to know somebody that is really MAGA.
By the way, I know those people are very close to me, so don't say that.
Yeah,
I know,
friends. I have friends who, and I have brothers who voted for Trump all three times, and I think what they feel is they feel that this monetary system that we've had for 40 years, and they can't express it, but what they're feeling is this 40-50 year monetary system that we've had has benefited DC, K Street, and Wall Street.
And now it's benefiting him more than anybody. Nobody's made more money in office than
I know, but you got to understand where their source of rage is. We have to understand Marx's rage. We have to understand.
Oh, yeah.
The left's rage. We have to understand the right's rage. Well, we have to understand MAGA's rage.
But the part that I have trouble with...
If we don't understand the rage, we can't find a solution.
I'm trying to. I think the man is absolutely spectacular at pointing out weaknesses.
I thought Clinton was a great politician until I saw Trump.
Okay, what I'm saying...
Trump makes...
Okay, but he's an absolute master.
He's a master at picking
out what's wrong and then pointing blame at somebody. But the thing that I don't get is when Newt Gingrich maybe said it the best is he said people in Washington have no feeling of how pissed off the rest of the people in the country are.
Oh, they're pissed. People in New York have been
for years. Okay, so he goes, that's why you had the...
There was very little voter turnout.
Well, he said that's why you had the Obama situation. He hasn't been here long enough to be co-opted. He's sort of from the outside. Let's try him. Yeah. All of a sudden, he gets in office, and he becomes totally co-opted. I didn't vote for him the second time.
You look at his war stance. I thought he was going to be a president of peace, but he was doing all these wars overseas.
Well, but he also
killed civilians and Americans.
But he also...
And he was deporting illegals.
Okay, but he also inherited the Bush fiasco.
He was a continuation of Bush, in my opinion.
Well, that's I'm saying, but he inherited those situations.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's very difficult. I mean,
words are great.
I'm not really changing the subject. Did you ever read The Day of the Jackal?
You've mentioned it several times, but I haven't gotten around to it.
It's about a guy who's going to assassinate De Gaulle, right? But the bottom line for that is they bring him in. You know, the guys who wanted to assassinate De Gaulle were people, and this is long before our time. The French had their colonization group, okay, and who knows what they were stealing in all these other countries? Sort of like the Brits, sort of like us in some places. We were never as good at it as they were. French Foreign Legion was in Algeria and all these other places. And they were
I actually was in Djibouti, which was a former French Foreign Legion colony.
Yeah, and so they were there. Who knows what they were doing, stealing from other people. So De Gaulle essentially shut down the French Foreign Legion.
Yeah.
Sort of like if Kennedy...
Wasn't the French Foreign Legion behind the Vietnam anti-communist movement?
I believe it was. Yeah. But, I mean, sort of like Kennedy wanted to shut down what the CIA was doing. How'd that work out for him?
Didn't work out good for him.
No, so I mean, these
guys didn't work out good for Nixon either.
Yeah, these guys were absolutely against De Gaulle because of that. Whatever money they were stealing in Algeria or wherever you were at, they couldn't do it anymore. So they brought him back and they hated the guy. Well, I think Obama landed sort of in the middle of that. Okay, well we're in this Afghanistan thing. We don't really want to be out of it. By the way, we might be making dough over there. Some people are making dough over there. I mean, some people were serving like you, Hal. I read articles that the people who were serving, that were getting paid by us, meaning the U.S. of A., were making like half or a third as much as the mercenaries, and the mercenaries were better armed, and they were living the life of Riley over there. And the people who were doing the contractors that were doing the dinners and the laundry and all other stuff were making money hand over fist.
Yeah, before the contractors were serving the food in the mess halls or the galleys, the sailors and soldiers were making peanuts doing that stuff. Making peanuts, probably 40 cents an hour.
So every time Obama, even if he wanted to, I don't know, how could he have shut all that down and gotten the hell out of it?
I don't think a president has the power to shut that stuff down.
And so we went from Obama to Trump 1, who didn't do crap either. And then all of a sudden Biden It got so bad, he pulls us out of there. And nothing ever looks good when you pull people out of there. And now Trump's still railing about how Biden screwed up the war in Afghanistan. But he was there 4 years. He is so good at realizing 90% of the people in his country forget the fact that he was there 4 years before Biden. He's going to be critical of Biden. He could have done it himself, right? But he didn't.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
well, I think he found out how difficult it is.
Well, look how hard it was going to be for Kennedy to get out of Vietnam.
Bureaucracy.
I mean, Kennedy wanted out of Vietnam. Maybe that's the reason he got killed. And all of a sudden, Johnson, we're all back in again, right?
Well, I think JFK's downfall was taking on the CIA. He didn't. He was not a fan of the CIA.
Well, how could you be?
Yeah.
I mean, the people get, you know, way a lot of power, and you know, so I don't know where this is all going to land, but
I think the first Bush was the CIA's choice for president in 1980.
Oh yeah.
And then Reagan gets elected instead. And guess what? Bush is his vice president, and it makes sense that there's an attempted assassination of Reagan to install a CIA puppet at the head of the United States
government. I did not realize how much he was involved in the Bay of Pigs thing.
Yeah.
Which, you know, boy, talk about a fiasco there, huh?
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, you look at this, and I don't know.
I wonder if it was intentionally bad to make Kennedy look bad. I don't know.
Well, they wanted to get him to essentially show up with the Air Force and take over Cuba. Yeah. Now there's another ridiculous example.
Well, I think the Nixon takedown was really because Nixon wanted to find out what happened to his friend Kennedy, because this is back when time when Republicans and Democrats were actually friends with each other.
Yep.
And Nixon wanted to find out what really happened.
They were actually pretty good friends.
Yeah, they were. Yeah.
Although Kennedy did have the line. Remember, I don't know if you remember this. Kennedy had a great dry.
Well, Kennedy was a good politician, so yeah, well,
he had a great dry sense of humor. But evidently, there was a cranberry poisoning episode during the campaign, and the cranberries from Washington. There was something I don't know anything about camp cranberries, but something happened in the growing of the cranberries where there was some botulism. Something was in them, so they were bad. Now the ones from Wisconsin were fine, and this is one of the first times, way before AI, where people found the ability to put on the package where those cranberries came from. Anyway,
yeah.
So Kennedy, Nixon eats some cranberries in Wisconsin or something, saying it's okay. So the next night or the next week, Kennedy eats some cranberries from Wisconsin, and he goes, "Well, I think the cranberries from Wisconsin are just fine." He goes, "But if they aren't, I'll have the satisfaction of taking the vice president with me," or something along those lines. And of course, everybody burst out. Kennedy had an amazing dry sense of humor, which is a typical Irish dude in that regard. But anyway, so when are we going to? What's your over under on this incursion being quote a success? Get somebody better in office over there. I don't think it's going to be a Democrat, but somebody better in office over there who's less of a no-good-nick to everybody around him. Strait of Hormuz back open again. Are we talking 2 weeks, hopefully, a month, maybe pretty hopefully, or are we talking drag?
I think the military, the Navy is gone, right? They don't have any big ships left. They have these little boats. And then they're doing a pretty good job eliminating all these missile launchers. Well,
But then again, I'm with you. We only get one side of the story.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, I suspect our people are really good, but how?
Well, when they announced that Khomeini was dead, the Iranians said he wasn't, and then you find out that he was.
Oh, yeah, that only lasted about an hour or two.
Yeah. So
how long can
you
we?
You can't really trust what the Iranians are saying.
How long? You can't really trust what we're saying either. But
no, you really can't trust what any government says.
But I have a feeling our people are doing the good job, like they always do. And my question to you is this. Massive amount of stuff we're doing back and forth off the aircraft carriers and supplying, you know, obviously these planes are running on gasoline. You know, we're doing how long that far away can we keep up this effort without, you know, having to send everybody back to port and cool down and fill up and all the other stuff?
Oh, you won't have to send anybody back to port because they have tankers that refill all these ships. Well,
wasn't the big scandal?
They do it underway.
I know, but wasn't the big scandal 2 years ago that they had to pull a group from the Mediterranean because the one tanker they had ran aground or something. But I guess my question is, how long can this kind of this level?
We have long history of operating in the Persian Gulf. I don't think we're going anywhere anytime soon.
Okay, this level of activity.
We can get restocked from Saudi Arabia.
Okay, but this level of activity, missiles per day, drones per day, sorties per day, how long can that keep up? I don't say 2 years, because I don't think it can.
Well, I was under the impression that we had given away all of our weapons to Ukraine, so I'm kind of shocked that we still have these stockpiles.
We didn't give our naval stuff to them.
No, I mean like the shells and whatnot. Missiles.
I think there's a lot of difference in stuff that come from planes that artillery shells. That's what I'm saying. How on one hand...
Apparently we got a pretty good stockpile, yeah. I guess.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What do you... You know, 6 months
when
ago,
you're in the belly of the Truxton, you don't really understand the stockpiles that.
Well, I guess, but how many Department 6 months ago? All we did was talk about how we better start making missiles and this kind of stuff because we're using them faster and we're making them and all. I mean, what if the stockpiles were lousy? What is this doing to them? If we're going to have to redo and buy it all again, where are we going to get the money? I mean, there's questions here, right?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be. You know, from the looks of it, I think. We're going to be fine. I don't understand why we would run out of anything. I mean, apparently we've got plenty of
munitions. We run out of stuff because you use it all up.
Yeah, but it looks like we have plenty of munitions. So I think that the Department of Defense probably understates their inventories because they want them replenished, right? You know, it's like a fire department. If government says, hey, we're going to cut the fire department's budget, guess what? You know, people who have a vested interest in it might start lighting fires, which they got to go out and put out, right? So I think the Department of Defense has this incentive to understate their inventories because they want.
I'm trying to get to
be replenished.
I'm with you, and I think we've had several wars now, or whatever you want to call them. You know, the first Gulf, second
logistics
Gulf.
Logistics has never been the issue in these wars.
Okay, but we've also gotten so good, I'll use the term, that they're. One or two or three week episodes.
Yeah.
And my question is, what if it's not? I'm not saying...
I think it's going to last about a week and a half, and I think it's going to be over,
all right,
honestly.
I'm with you, and your lips to God's ear. My question is, if it's 6 weeks, can we still do X number of sorties per hour and missiles and whatever else? I think the answer is probably no.
I think what's going to happen is, if we're running out of munitions... We're not going to get to the point where we run out. They're just going to end it and claim victory. So,
okay.
Yeah. So we're not going to run out. If we're running out, they're going to end it. So.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm just. Yeah. I mean, it's. I don't ever want to be in one of these.
The
wars.
The problem is who's going to take over, right? In
well, that's
Iran. Are we going to get somebody that plays ball with the CIA and the Department of Defense?
Well, is somebody,
going to more radical? That's the question.
Is it somebody that 85% of the population want or not? I would hope the answer is yes. But
I'm hoping the person that takes over is I'm hoping that that person represents the majority of the people.
How many
in
people?
Iraq. I mean, Iraq is like a 6,000-year-old.
You mean Iran?
Society. Iran, yeah. Iran is like a 6,000-year-old.
How many people
society.
Do you know from Iran? I know probably seven or eight.
I've had students that were Persian.
Okay.
I've had students that were Persian. I think they preferred the word Persian.
Yeah, I do too.
Iranian. Yeah.
Well, I'm stunned by how intelligent the ones that are here are so happy to be here. And most of them can't go back because, as a matter of fact, I know a guy who's an engineer who said they'd never let him out because
that Iranian guard is pretty ruthless. I've seen videos of them just mowing down people with machine guns.
Well, most of them are convinced that 85% of the population wants these guys out. So if it lands that they get somebody real over there, I tell you what.
I think you got about 20% of the population tyrannizing about 80%.
I think it's 20. I bet it's less than that, but those guys are...
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, I'm all for that.
Maduro is pretty bad, too. I've seen Maduro's police... Mowing down protesters with machine guns.
Yeah,
too,
the brutality around the world, like running over people with tanks in Tiananmen Square. I mean, so if it all works out, I guess I'm happy as a
clam. All I gotta say is, when I was in the Navy and I went over to other nations, we spent a lot of time in other nations. When I got back, I just realized that Americans are really spoiled rotten brats because they don't really understand how good we really have it. Now, things have gotten worse since then, I think, politically.
You know who understands it? Understands it are the people who are from other places. The people.
Oh, I know they do.
Yeah,
they do.
The people we don't like are the people who understand it more than we do.
Yep. Exactly.
I the people who have lived near Iran,
it may feel bad here, but when you go to another country and you realize that you can't say whatever you want, that you can be thrown in jail for any reason.
Well, we're closing in on it. We're closing in on that here, aren't we?
Yeah. No, I don't think so. People can say what they want to say here. I mean, Twitter's really vile on both the left and the right.
We have a government that's purging military and stuff for people who say the wrong thing.
Well, we had a previous president that was telling people that if they didn't get the shot, they were fired.
Okay, well, that's, I'm talking about
not pay.
People's views now are getting them tossed, which is, well, we're down that road.
People thought 4 or 5 years ago that if you refused a shot, that was political stuff.
Why is it, and I know you say that you don't have an affiliation here, why is it whenever I say something about the administration that I would say if they were Democrat, somebody immediately has to say that Biden was worse? Why?
Because both parties, in my opinion, are bad, but and you have to put things in context.
But right now, Biden is one step in the grave. I don't care about Biden.
Yeah. But you can't just... See, I didn't vote for Trump in 2000 because I hated the way he handled...
2016.
2000. Or 2020, sorry, 2020. Yeah. I didn't vote for him because I hated the way that he handled the pandemic and how he handed the keys over to Fauci and how he rushed out those vaccines. I was celebrating the fact that he didn't get elected, but I was not happy that Biden got elected.
No,
I didn't like either choice.
When's the last time you voted for somebody you actually liked?
Oh, it's, I mean, I have to compare, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie with Master and Commander where they're drinking in the captain's table. They're having dinner. All the officers are having dinner and they're looking at the weevils on the table. Well, yeah, it's a lesser of two evils, right, in my opinion. You know, so you got to vote for the person who's going to do the less damage.
I'm
going to
say one guy I actually liked, and you'll never guess from what you think of me. You'll never guess who that guy was.
I don't know. Reagan? I don't know.
No, I'm not that old.
I have no idea, Tom.
No. No, actually, I was that old. I'm talking about, I like Jerry Ford.
Oh, you like Jerry Ford? Okay.
I thought he was, maybe because he didn't, the campaign, whatever, he came up with a whole different system. I thought the guy was a really good senator. I thought he made a whole lot of sense. I liked the guy, you know. And
hey, Tom, here's a prediction. Typically, every 4 years, we vote for somebody completely opposite of who we had in office.
That's very dangerous.
Who's the complete opposite right now in the Democrat Party of Trump, his blue suit, red tie? Who's the complete opposite?
Well, I don't know. To be determined, I guess.
Fetterman from Pennsylvania.
God.
I think we can have a hoodie in the White House.
Boy, I'm not really.
He's the complete opposite of Trump. Complete opposite. And he's playing it pretty centrist in the Senate.
Well, I think.
I'm just saying. I think Obama was the complete opposite of Bush. Trump was the complete opposite of Obama. Biden was the complete opposite of Trump. Who's the complete opposite in the Senate right now? Of Trump.
Well, someplace, and I don't see this happening with the two-party system. I honestly think that if you get them closed door over a beer, 60-70% of Republicans,
Republicans, are, most of it's a show,
and are not in tune with this. Yeah. And I'm going to say that way more than that of the Democrats, and I consider myself I really didn't see any difference between a moderate Democrat and a moderate Republican 20 years ago, to be honest with you, other than maybe the personality. That's why I flipped back and forth for who I voted for. But I don't want any part of where the Democratic Party is now. I'm saying there's probably a good 60% of the population that doesn't feel they have a party now.
Oh, I agree, yeah.
And then our question is, will one party wake up to develop that, or will there have to be a third party?
Well, I've always thought if the Libertarian Party were to supplant one of these two major parties, what would end up happening is they'd end up realizing that what they have to offer is not sellable to the population.
Well, those guys, every time I try to vote for one of those guys, I actually read the platform. I'm appalled by their platform, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Well, but think about it, though. I mean, if the economy goes into recession.
By the way, we got to go. By the way, I think for 80% of the population, we've been in a recession for 20 years, and I know it's not a popular.
Oh, I know, I agree. Yeah, that's where.
Wait a minute! Whoa! You disagree with me?
Yeah, that's where the MAGA.
When was the last time you did that?
That's where the Madami voter rage comes from. It comes from that, Tom.
S&P futures down 120. We got a dash. Down 124. NASDAQ futures down 540. I might have to, if Carl stays skiing this week, I might have to tap you one more time. It's always good. Are you a buyer here or what? What are you buying? Are you buying anything?
Real estate. I buy real estate.
At this price, are you waiting for that to come down too?
Well, you know what? The government's going to inflate it. I don't think prices are coming down, and real estate prices are going to continue to rise.
I think if they inflate here, boy, I don't want to see this because I saw it before when it came out of my hide. If they inflate here, you're going to see this 10-year rate at 10%.
Yeah.
And it's
well, not I just tweeted and I shared this graph with you.
I saw that.
I have yields all heading down, so somebody's buying this stuff. I've every yield from like the 30-day to the 10-year to the 20-year. They're all headed down.
10-year's been up 2 days in a row. It's up over 1%. What are you looking at?
The data I'm looking at, it looks like it's coming down.
Oh, the TNX.
I shared it on the email with you.
Hal, trust me, the TNX is up. It was up 0.54 this morning. I'm looking right at it. I don't know.
Well, maybe this morning, but
yesterday
the overall trend for the last week or so. Maybe the last month is down.
It ducked under 4%. You are correct. The 10-year. Now, the last 2 days, it's been up fairly dramatically.
Yeah, but if you look at the trend from over like a year-long trend, those yields are headed down.
What I'm saying is I am...
And I don't know why.
I'm trying to agree with you. Why. I'm saying the last 2 days,
yeah.
Normally in something like this, you see a run to treasuries, which means the rates go down.
I don't really pay attention to like day-to-day shifts. I don't pay attention.
Well, if it goes up 0.5% a day for the next 6 days, you better pay attention to it.
What I'm hoping is that trend continues, so by June I can refinance my mortgage on my VA loan here in North Carolina.
I got a beard that says we're higher than we are here by June.
Well, I'm just praying, Tom. Pray for me, man.
I
need to get this mortgage under control.
I'll bet you the usual, Randolph. $1. Was it $1 or $5?
They bet $1.
It was $1. Have a good one. S&P futures down 121, which is close to the low. NASDAQ futures down 539. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jock. Nice job, Ricky, with all these people.
That's all, folks.